welcome to AMO Kenzoku. We are a group of four bubblegum crisis boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hey y'all, I'm Mike.
I'm Dylan.
Hello, I'm Nick.
And I'm today's host, Sam. Today is episode 77, when we're recording on February the 5th, 2026, and we are still here. So with that, let's get started. Ashin. Okay, so this time it's been a long time. We've had like episodes where we talk about whatever the current season of anime and whatever. And we've had things going on, so we haven't been able to meet and schedules haven't aligned, and so it's been a long time, so we're using this to kind of catch up on all the kind of random stuff that we've been watching in the meantime, or watching or reading, or playing, because that's it, an O accounts for the AM, the O and AMO. So let's see, where do we start here? Dylan, you've been watching everything in at least, what, 15-minute chunks, 5-minute chunks?
Yeah, I've been doing, as I call them, my very quick anime reviews, where I watch a show for somewhere between 5 and 15 minutes. It's usually somewhere between 5 and 8. And then this quarter, I've been very smart and just open up my notes app and just dictate my thoughts in there, which is pretty quick, and then put it up there, which is, it's actually been kind of fun. So I've gone through, I actually just, the other day, actually finished going through pretty much everything that I could find that was in the US that was not a season 2, 3 or continuing of something. So I have reviews up for like 38 shows.
And you're going to be putting that up on the site, I believe, in some section?
Yeah, yeah. It's going to go up on the main AMO Kenzoku. Right now I've got it out in a silly GitHub guest, but I decided to formalize it. So I've been going through, and I think from let's just start reasonable, something
like,
that's...
What are your like favorites? Like what are the favorite stuff that you've seen since we last
Okay. All right, I've got two that are in my head right now. One I know will be on someone else's, which is Detectives These Days Are Crazy, and that's back from the summer.
Yes. I was going to bring that one too.
I still have a couple of episodes left because I'm just savoring it. It is fabulous and it gets better. It has an incredible opening, incredible ending. It's a story of a guy who was a, you know, almost kind of like a Detective Conan. He was like the super cool detective when he was in high school and whatever. And now he's like in his mid-40s. And so like everything hurts.
No, I think it's worse. I think he's in his mid-30s.
Oh, God, he probably is. Yeah. and then he gets this completely out of control high school girl as his assistant. And then you meet other people and the show is chef's kiss.
It's so perfect. It's like it manages to stay really funny the whole time, which is really hard for a comedy series. And the animation actually stays pretty decent, which is also pretty hard for a gag series like this. Most of the time, they kind of don't even try on purpose, you know, like kind of the gag manga style. And this one, they're just kind of like, they put in a little bit more effort. I highly, highly recommend it. That's like my dark horse. I don't know. It was the biggest surprise of last year, I think.
I agree. It was one that if I was not doing my very quick anime reviews, I probably would not have watched it. But then I watched the first bit and I was like, okay, this might be good. And then I kept going back and I'm like, oh man, this show's fabulous. It's definitely stupid jork anime.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, you guys have sold me on it now.
Another one that is fabulous and is from this season up on Crunchyroll is You Don't Know Gunma Yet. It is a series of literally 3-minute anime. There's like 12 of them, so you can watch the whole thing for that. But it's produced as presumably as like a tourist thing, kind of for Gunma Prefecture. But it was from a manga, and it's done in almost like this weird kind of like horror style that is then light and funny and hilarious and educational. It is definitely stupid jork, and it's one of those things where the length of the episodes being 3 minutes means that like it never overstays its welcome. And it's fabulous. And it's another stupid show that I recommend everybody watch because it's great, perfect AMO Kenzoku show.
Cool. I'll have to check that out, especially since it's so short. It seems like,
oh yeah,
why not?
Yeah, you can commit to it. And every episode you get an ending, you get the ending theme song, kind of, you know, Masaru style, where it doesn't matter. The episodes are like 3 minutes. You get the ending song, which is also an adorable song and educational and funny.
I'm always amused by those shows that are like 3 minutes long and like a third of that is the opening.
Yeah, it's great. I can't recommend that one well enough, highly enough as well. That one is fabulous.
Wait, we'll come back to you. Let's switch to Nick. What have you got?
Oh man, bring? I have nothing but normie like season 2 on stuff. Like I got so busy in January that I didn't have too many much, I would say, energy to like try something new. What I will say from summer, the big surprise for me was Ruri Rocks.
Oh yeah, that was really good
for me. That came out of nowhere, and it's one of those when you hear the topic you're like, it's about geology, you're like, huh? And then you see the execution, you're like, oh, that's actually kind of cool. And like, I mean, the art and you know, I would say quality of it has no right to look as good as it does, for yeah, sure. Right. I'm like, holy moly, this looks amazing. Just from a like aesthetics point of view, like the color palettes and everything is just like really, really top notch. It really scratches a particular part of my brain, I think, that needed that stimulation. So yeah, it's not like I wouldn't say it's an exceptional show like content wise, but it's just very easy to watch, and it's different. It's more seinen like, so you know, mm-hmm. not like it's, you know, you need a bit more of an attention span for it. But yeah, that was a big pleasant surprise. And then I would say Atypical.
Wait, just...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I wanted to comment on that because I also really loved that. Was a super big surprise for me, and the one thing that maybe to sell it to other people is it's got the education aspect to it where you're learning a lot of stuff about geology, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but also it is kind of like a treasure hunting show because they're hunting for particular rocks, and so it's got kind of a bit of adventure to it. You know, it's low stakes and all that stuff, but there
is made an abyss without the gore and body horror.
I guess way less adventure than that.
Is it
more
like actually semi-educational, like say a Moyashimon or something? Or
yeah, that's a good comparison. Mm. I think.
Yeah, I think that's in line with it for sure. I would say Moyashimon was leaned harder into the education part of it, but yeah, mm-hmm. I would say it's closer to Moyashimon for sure.
I too also like that show. I haven't continued too much further, but I had my little comment on there was. Like, it's a sports anime for rock hunting and hiking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say so.
I will say, it's also got the, much like the One Punch Man anime looks a lot better than the One Punch Man manga. this is based on a manga, and the anime looks like 1,000 times better than the manga.
Well, I think there's going to be a sudden turnaround there.
It was one of those where someone was like, this needs to be animated, and they went, like, all in on it, because man, it is, again, it has no right to look as good as it really is does. Like, I'm glad it does. I think shows mm-hmm. like this it goes to show that you can have a show that isn't just action and, you know, shonen, you know, regurgitated shonen stuff, and that has to be well in anime. Like, it can be a mature topic and still be animated well and still be, you know, still be worthwhile to watch. So yeah, that was one of the pleasant surprises for me from last, I believe it was summer. So yeah, it's from a while ago.
What was your...
The other one, which was completely atypical of what I normally watch, was the English title is The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity. What caught my eye on it was it's a Cloverworks series. So I was like, okay, they definitely do good stuff. And then I ended up getting, it's a very soothing, healing anime. It's romance, but animated insanely well. I would say it's pretty low stakes. Like, it's very, it feels very much high school in its stakes. Like, to a high schooler, it's like, you know, socially awkward moments are worse than death. And I think this show kind of, I won't give it away, but it definitely makes you feel like those are the stakes. But at the same time, they still have something meaningful, as far as like from their perspectives anyway. And yeah, it's animated exquisitely well, and it's very easy watch, and it's very soothing, healing anime. It was what I needed at the time, so that's kind of nice. It's easier to recommend for anybody that can enjoy romance, but yeah, it's not anything I would say revolutionary. It's got some likable characters in it for sure, but yeah, the animation is definitely the main selling point. It is incredibly well animated.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. So, Mike, I know you have said before we were recording that you didn't have much, but pretty sure you've got at least one thing you did that's AMO.
Well, I did. As far as what I've actually gone through, I did read through all of the Call of the Night manga at some point. I can't exactly remember when, but I know I wanted to catch up on that. It was probably before the TV came back out.
Nice.
And somehow I didn't actually then watch that TV, but at least I know how the manga ends.
And that one was, the anime is still High Dive? I forget.
Mm-hmm. It's still High Dive. S2 is still High Dive in High Dive. Okay. Kale. Yeah.
And didn't you, you know, your local theater was like recently renovated, wasn't it?
The downtown Pitt Theater where we went to college, yeah. Was recently renovated with what's that tech? It's Dolby Vision Plus Atmos, so it's essentially the tech that they have in their Dolby Theater locations, but no longer an AMC exclusive in the US and available for less like 100% fully custom installs and more for renovation into existing auditoriums. And so nice. They're doing a big construction project on that theater, putting Atmos in all the other places. But that one theater has Atmos and Vision, and I caught the second Avatar movie in it at the beginning of the year in that, and it was pretty stunning as far as, you know, an experience. What I think of, I can't really remember the plot, as is typical for me with Avatar movies, but it looked, sounded really cool.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the idea with those things, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Like, HDR lets you see some cool stuff, like people backlit by firelight, but then you can still see their facial features and stuff like that without looking super fake.
Oh,
and they had, like, a chase scene under a pier where you would have cutouts in the pier that, you know, sunlight was coming down through while you were zooming under this at high speed, stuff like that, that really showed off the HDR, but in less annoying ways than stuff was showing off 3D with, you know, the pencil poking out of the screen at you effect that was super common back in the day.
Oh, so this was not 3D though, right? Or you didn't watch it in 3D?
This was not 3D, though I think it was high frame rate probably, though that...
Oh, really?
I'm kind of unsure how I felt about that, because at least Cameron likes to use, you know, a lot of lower than full frame rate, like, semi-slow-mo for effect sometimes.
Hmm.
And it's, at least for me, way more jarring when you slow down to that from like 48 or whatever than when you slow down from 24.
Yeah, I hate high frame rate. I think it looks like trash.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it, again, working for something that's more supposed to be a ride than a movie. It works fine, but then don't be cinematic with the slow-mo. Like, pick a lane.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that was cool. As far as vaguely AMO related, like, next week is going to be the 35th anniversary party of a certain college anime club that we are all familiar with.
Oh, man.
And they are taking over on this coming Friday the Palm Theater for a screening of something. I don't think they've announced what yet, so...
Oh, cool.
That'll be interesting.
That's rad. The Palm, so the Palm's still around.
Yeah, the Palm is very still around. Last year, or summer 2024? Yeah, summer 2024, the longtime owner of the Palm basically handed off operations to the Slow Film Festival, so it's now called the Slow Film Center / the Palm Theater.
Oh, that's still okay.
Some of, you know, a bunch of the same staff, and is no longer as exclusively a first-run indie theater, but is also having, like, a changing programming, like, daily changing programming track of revival programming in addition to their new run indies, so sometimes they have some cool things there.
Is the popcorn still dirt cheap, or did inflation ruin that, too?
The popcorn is $2 now for the smallest size, not one. The sodas have gone up a fair amount. They're like $4, $5, or $6 for the three sizes. I think the popcorn is $2, $4, or $6 for the three of that. I don't really notice because I've got a like membership for the, that they started offering when they went to Slow Film Center that gets like $100 and gets you 6 free passes, and then after that $1 off every ticket there, plus you get a free popcorn every visit.
Oh, that actually seems pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that pays for itself decently fast. At least it did with all the movies that I saw there in 2004-05.
Is that $100 a year or $100 a month?
$100 a year, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so for $100 you get 6 passes, which if you use them in the evening is like 12. So that's like 72 is just in the passes. You've got another 12 in value just from the free popcorns if you use those passes, so that's 84. So then you just have to go, like, a few more, like another, I don't know, 5 times or something for it to be totally worth it popcorn-wise. And if not, oh well, you supported a nonprofit that's keeping movies alive.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's worth something.
Agreed. Going back to the topic of our...
Oh, it
our
also gives you a, like, 15% discount on Slow Film Festival, though unfortunately I'm going to be out of the country this year for that.
Yeah, there's worse problems to have. Back to the topic of our old club taking it over. Obviously, you said they haven't announced whatever they're going to do, but are they just, like, plugging a laptop in, or are they did they actually, like, get, like, a proper, you know, like... film master? Yeah. I'm curious now.
Yeah, I have no idea if they have D-Cinema or if they're going to play off commercial media.
Hmm.
I don't know how that works. I know that there are like different legalities for what's a private versus a public screening, so I'm not sure how they're considering that.
Are you gonna go?
Yeah, absolutely. And
can you find out what they're doing? I'm curious too.
Yeah. Chronicle it maybe we make an episode out of it. I mean,
I will absolutely let you know what they do for it. Where did they? I swear they announced a schedule at one point, but now I am having trouble finding it. Anyway, yeah. I think I just got there. Okay, so they have the Palm Theater on Friday. On Saturday, they are going to be doing trivia, eyes, panels, art, and cosplay contests, plus possibly some new stuff like speed dating, because it's Valentine's Day. And then Sunday, they're doing an auction, which is where I'll be giving them another AX96 poster.
How many of those do you still have?
I think I've probably still got 3 or 4 of them, because know I bought, like, one that I got from Evan when he got a supply for the 25th anniversary part, or the 20th anniversary party, and then we gave that one, another remaining from that, away at the 25th as well, and then the artist whose name I am drawing, Lionel Lum, was on the Facebook Vintage Anime Fans group that I was a mod of late last decade and offered them up for sale again for like the first time in a couple decades. So I picked up like 3 or 4 of them, I think, just to have some on hand for future use.
Jeez, stock up.
Might as well. I mean, they, you know, that is a pretty awesome poster for like $25 or $30 each.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. So what I have been watching or experiencing or whatever is I'm sure other people will mention the various shows that I've been watching like already. So I will say I've been watching some movies in the theater whenever I can, and they look halfway decent. Two worth mentioning, well, two I'll start with mentioning is I saw 100 Meters or Hyaku-M, which was a movie about the 100 meter dash.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really interesting, I'll say. Apparently the director is a guy who did a thing for, I think it was Netflix, called Orb or something like that. I don't really know anything about it. People say it's very good. The particular thing about this movie is it was done, is all rotoscoped basically. And that was pretty weird for me. I enjoyed the movie overall, but I'm not a super big fan of rotoscoping. If you have a chance to see it, I think it's going to be on, or maybe it already is. I think it's on Amazon Prime.
It's up on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, Netflix. Okay. Netflix. Yeah. So check it out. I recommend it. I mean, it's a movie, so it's like only an hour, 90 minutes of your time. I'm interested in what people think of that. It's got a couple of really, really good moments in it. That I won't spoil. The other one I saw is All You Need Is Kill, which this is the anime version of a novel, which was also adapted into live-action Tom Cruise movie Edge of Tomorrow. This was done by Studio 4C. I just saw this one a few weeks ago. It was, unfortunately, it was very disappointing. The plot of the movie, the story, is very repetitive by its nature, and so you have to be very careful in how you execute something like that to keep it interesting, and I think they just flopped on that. It's just extremely repetitive.
Was it directed by Koji Morimoto?
No.
Oh, okay, it wasn't one of his.
Yeah, it's somebody I didn't recognize. Okay. The other thing is kind of interesting in that it's actually a CG movie, mostly, and the characters are all CG, and it's done where you, some of the times you can't tell, but a lot of, you know, certain things, they've got that particular like arm, upper body, like shoulders and arm movements that are give it away. So I don't know. I was kind of disappointed in that. Unfortunately, I can't really recommend it.
That's too bad.
Go watch the Tom Cruise movie. I think it's better. I actually really liked that movie. I thought it was a pretty good adaptation. Or read the book. The novel, I think, is translated and put out by Viz. So if you want to see that.
Oh, movie-wise, I did remember one anime that I actually did see that I never would have expected to see in a theater back in November, which was Angel's Egg.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was, yeah, the movie that it still is, which confusing as F, but damn if... You know, seeing Oshii directing Amano's art on the big screen isn't gorgeous.
That was the 4K restoration.
I was about to say, this was the restoration, right? Oh, man, yeah. I can only imagine how good that looked.
Wow. I'm sad I missed it, but I'm sure it'll come back, and I'll go watch it then.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, speaking of movies, did anybody manage to catch Chainsaw Man Reza?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Arc? Okay, I unfortunately missed it just because timing-wise. What was your opinion on it?
It was good. I mean, it was really good.
I mean, I know the content. I like the arc, but just as far as, like, you know, since it was a feature-length movie, like, was the animation, you know, up to par?
You know, I will say maybe it was a little disappointing animation-wise. It did feel like the TV show. Like, it didn't feel like the quality on the TV show, granted, is pretty good. I should say really good. It's the TV show is pretty high quality, but they do kind of use a lot of CG and stuff.
Sure. I wouldn't expect them to change that from the movie, necessarily.
Because... Well, no. True, but I feel like movies is usually, you know, like, they take less shortcuts and animate more, and this feels like they just kind of, they had the same TV budget for the movie.
Hmm. The TV show had a pretty large budget. Like, I recall that MAPPA did not actually make money on it until they started doing the merchandising afterwards.
So I actually read a little thing there, and apparently MAPPA like self-financed that, and they actually they actually kind of took it because it was all basically the only way that a studio can make back money is off of, you know, disc sales, which is always a crapshoot whether that works. But then apparently within the last couple weeks or something, MAPPA signed a basically an exclusive production deal with Netflix.
Yeah,
which basically they have funding and a little more security, so maybe they'll be less of the reputation they got as for being a brutal place to work for. Who knows? But yeah, so apparently they signed one of those Netflix deals, which hopefully, you know, is good for them. They've certainly done a good number of shows that I think have done well on Netflix, which is probably why it was one of those things where, like, okay, because like they did both seasons of the new Ranma, and they've done several other. They know they do way too much stuff.
Yeah, they have their hands in a lot of things now.
But yeah, so apparently they're doing that. So we'll see more of their stuff as probably as Netflix exclusives going forward.
Interesting. Back to the topic of revenue, though, it looks like the Reza Arc movie made $160 million globally, which I would assume would make it a huge success. I can't imagine that movie cost, you know, that much to make. I mean, it is anime, so I'm sure I'm sure it wasn't like a $3 million or like $1.6 million Satoshi Kon budget, but I can't imagine it costing more than somewhere in the north of, you know, maybe tens of millions. So even then, it looks like commercially it was like, I mean, I saw a lot of people talking about it on what little social media I troll. So I think it was received pretty well overall.
Yeah, I mean, Chainsaw Man is a pretty hot property. So.
Especially in the West. Yeah,
especially in the West.
I don't know if I would agree. Like when I was in Japan there in the fall, like there was all sorts of stuff like all over the place for it.
Now, I'm not saying it's not popular in Japan, but it really took off in the West as well.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Continuing on the M of AMO, because I am up pretty much up to date with Chainsaw Man, and man, that manga is weird. It has gotten really weird. Frankly, like I honestly really can't recommend the second half of it. I just don't think it's, I don't think it's great. And I think that, Fujimoto, he's done plenty of other brilliant stuff, like kind of in between doing that. Like he did Look Back in the middle of doing some of that stuff. And like, I feel like he's just trying to end it. And it's like, it definitely has a feeling like it's very close to the end and they're just kind of stretching it out to make all the money that they can and get to another couple tankobons or something.
Hot take. I don't know if I would be quite as harsh in my opinion, but I do feel like if you're reading Chainsaw Man, you can stop right after kind of the first arc or whatever you want to call that, where it naturally kind of ends.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't think it's a very hot take because I agree too. I would say I'm not caught up like Dylan is. I'm probably about 4 or 5 volumes behind, but I've lost the, I would say, desire's not the right term. Like, I still want to finish it, but it's not like I'm feverishly waiting for the next tankobon to come out. Obviously, if I'm 5 balls behind, I'm going at my own pace. And yeah, I think part of it is just the, without spoiling, you know, much content at all, I would just say the characters they introduce in the next, the second major arc just don't do it for me compared to the first arc. And also just how the first arc ended was just like, man, like that was like, that's Fujimoto at his best. Like that,
yeah, it was like a perfect ending.
It was. And if that's how the whole series ended, man, I would have been like, damn, that's a stellar manga that might be, you know, up in my all-time list just because of how, what a just intense ride it was. But I understand the also kind of want need for stability, right? Like obviously it became a global success and, you know, we all are, I don't know if we all are, but it's been kind of hinted that, you know, Shueisha is really concerned for its, you know, super long longevity, because obviously Oda has already indicated that there is going to be an end in the, you know, so not super long future for One Piece, and that's like the major pillar keeping Shueisha afloat right now. And Chainsaw Man was definitely one of the, I would say, you know, supporting pillars, and is still one of the supporting pillars, and I think there was a lot of pressure on Fujimoto to, like, keep it going. This is me, you know, just, you know, surmising this, but I wouldn't be, because especially after watching, I haven't watched it all, but watching parts of Dusky Fujimoto was a 17 to 23, I don't think, I think Fujimoto is at his best when he does, like, shorter form stories and content. Yeah. Like, I could probably read, I mean, it's not easy, but, like, I could probably read, like, you know, entire tankobons of just nothing but short stories that he writes, because I think his ability to execute something in short form is so good. Like, look at Look Back as an example.
I think the problem with, I mean, don't get me wrong, I actually still really enjoy this current arc, but yeah, it is not quite the same. But at the same time, I think it's like writing a comedy, in that, like, it's hard to find new things in it. He does, it's still entertaining, but I feel like he's explored the space pretty well. And, like, unlike, I think he does a pretty good job that he doesn't milk stuff too hard. Like, there's no, not really battles that go on for lots, many volumes and stuff. Like,
yeah, I completely agree. That's one of the things I like about it, is the violence and the battles are realistic in terms of, like, amount of time that actually takes. Like, these happen pretty quickly, and they're incredibly violent and explosive, and that's what I like about all the action in Chainsaw Man. It feels like, even though the elements are fantastical, the time, like, the I guess, for lack of a better, the power levels feel believable. Like, these are very powerful people and creatures and devils, that those fights do not last very long.
Yeah. Dylan, what else do you have for us?
I'm gonna stick in the M tier for manga, because I'm looking at some of my stuff from, my primary manga reading is through Viz and Shonen Jump, so that's where my stuff is. However, I will say that I'm reading, because it's not out in the US at all, Dagashikashi manga, which is the anime is in the US, but it's same guy who did Call of the Night, his manga before, that's on folks that run a candy shop out in the woods, and it's a fabulous manga. But aside from that, other ones that I'm going to point out and say I think are definitely cool are Kurumizawa's Folly. It's only up to, like, chapter, I don't know, like 12 or 13 right now. It's this really interesting one set in the 70s, and the art style also, like, mimics kind of the art style of the 70s in, like, a really well done way, where there's a struggling manga artist who ends up basically stealing the work of another person's who is illiterate, so we can't tell that his work is being stolen.
Oh.
It's really good. It's pretty new. It's really excellent. Another one that's pretty fun is...
How are you reading this one in Japanese? How are you reading it? Are you getting physical volumes?
No. The only one I'm doing Japanese is I have physical volumes of Dagashikashi. The rest of these all are through US Viz and Shonen Jump subscriptions.
Oh wow! So that's on on Shonen, or I guess assuming that one's on Viz.
Yeah, I think that one's on Viz. Yep.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
okay.
It's really good. Another one that's really fun is Para Shoppers. Which is a death game one where everyone gets a weird ability, and the main guy, his ability is that he can control a piece of straw.
Okay.
Which is, like, that is so terrible.
He's the guy with the frying pan from Battle Royale.
yeah, basically. And then other people, someone else can, like, she can do anything with bread, but it has to stay inside of the plastic bag. Okay. It's pretty ridiculous and fun. It's cool. It's not too far, and there's like, I think there's up to like around 50 chapters of it now. But it's pretty fun. Well done. Another one I think has gotten fairly popular is Ichi the Witch. It's a fun shonen series. Cool art, kind of interesting characters. I think the manga actually has gotten better as it's gone along. Mm-hmm. The first tankobon or two, they're okay, and I think it really kind of, it picks up and starts to get kind of cool. And it's a world where there's a bunch of witches, but they're all female witches only, and Ichi is the only male witch, and all the witches are trying to subdue basically these demons, and the rule for the demons is that, like, they have to give you like their quest that you complete so that you can control them, and their quests get progressively weirder and crazier like as it goes on. It's pretty good. It's a good series. Another one on the Viz side of stuff, they have all of the Junji Ito stuff, and they've started to put out a ton of his one-off books. So the newest one that I'm reading is called Shiver, which is another collection. Like, all the ones I've read out of there are so great. They're such fabulous one-off stories. So if you haven't looked at his one-off stuff in Viz, it's Shiver's a great collection with tons of really cool stories in there.
I really feel like that is a horror, for me at least, really shines in that short format.
Yeah.
Kind of like Tales from the Crypt kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's good. Scanning back through another one, actually, it's still coming out. These chapters are a little longer, so there's not that many. I wasn't really expecting, but I've gotten quite into it. It's called The Bugle Call, Song of War.
I hear that's neat.
Yeah, where it's kind of about this guy who can play a bugle, and then it basically makes magical light that people use to follow, and then there's a dude who has a giant whistle as his helmet.
Whoa.
Yeah. I wasn't quite sure. I was like, I don't know about this, but I read it. I'm like, actually, this is pretty cool. It's one of those lines, and there's like seven, I don't know, less than 10 chapters out of right now. They're a little longer, but it's pretty good. I can keep going. I read a lot of manga. Another one, like basically anything by Inio Asano, but his newest series, Mujina Into the Deep, is chef's kiss. So good. So seinen. It's definitely web only, like, and as not safe for work, but it's so cool. And it's another one that just like gets better as it goes along.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of really good stuff about Mujina. I mean, the art alone is like, the covers are like, oh man, this is...
Yeah.
Honestly, Sam, I immediately think of you when I look at the art, kind of the design aesthetic. It reminds me a lot of Blame, kind of just the mm-hmm. kind of how... just the aesthetic and the kind of like shock value art. So
I could see that. Okay. It doesn't look like Blame, but I totally get kind of what you're saying about it. It's
the design aesthetic of the covers specifically. I do agree that the art is different, but the design aesthetic definitely gives me Blame vibes.
It's...
I have a thing that I've been reading that is definitely has Blame vibes, but I can't remember the title right now. It's sitting on my coffee table.
So those are Dylan's booming out manga recommendations. Yeah, Call of the Night's fabulous. It's over, which sucks. It was a really great series. Glad you read that, Mike. I'm curious, you know, after taking a break to sleep and whatever, what Kodoyama's gonna do next.
Gonna be doing something next. Like, there's no, like, Call of the Night was, generally speaking, viewed as a pretty big commercial success. So
I think so. I mean, two anime seasons and
you know, Creepy Nuts dedicating to both of them all throughout, man. Like, that's they're a big deal right now. Like, they're I believe they are actually going to be at Coachella this year. So that's like huge deal for a Japanese artist to make it to there. Although, I mean, truth be told, it's gonna suck to be there because it's Coachella. But but it's still a big deal for as far as just notoriety for a music act. So
yeah, I was. A while ago, I was looking to see if they would be around at all to go to a concert, but yeah, I'm not going to Coachella. No, thank you.
Yeah, just not worth it. It's miserable. Yeah. It's so expensive now. Like, just to even if you're lucky enough to be able to lottery one of the passes, it's I want to say like it's in the four figures now to get there. So it's like that's just ridiculous.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I'm not a big concert person either. You know,
and it's in a miserable like scenario. It's going to be hot and gross and just not fun.
I want to mention two things that I thought were kind of funny, noteworthy in a funny way, and that they are surprise isekais. Where I'm watching a show thinking, wow, look, I'm enjoying this. It's not an isekai. It's amazing. It's so rare. And then it turns out it's an isekai. One of them was show May I Ask for One Final Thing. It's like about this noble woman who, of course, she has magic powers and she likes to beat people up, so she has her like using her magic to beat people up throughout the series. It's very well a very is not a adjective I should use, but it's a fun show. It's kind of simple.
I was going to describe it as a fun show as well. I'm also watching that one. It's got a great opening and ending, too. Songs are bangers. It's a fun show.
Yes, it is a fun show. Like, I think I can recommend it. If you're short on time and you want to watch stuff, it's maybe not the one to pick. But like, if you watch a decent amount of stuff and you're looking for a new thing, I recommend it. But yeah, it does turn out that it is an isekai. I won't say how. It's kind of an unusual way, not totally unique, but the other one, and Dylan, I think maybe you've watched more of this than I have, so you can tell me if I'm wrong, but Turkey the bowling anime is an isekai.
What
See, that was one that was actually, I was looking back through my notes and it was on my notes for that one was actually has a decent script, curious where it goes. I was not expecting it to go into isekai.
Well, how much of it did you watch?
Like half an episode.
Okay, yeah. The first episode ends basically and them going like back in time or something.
So what, it Tokyo Revengers, you basically?
I don't know. It's like feudal Japan. Like,
way back then. Oh, okay.
Yeah, back. So I didn't watch any more after that. I keep meaning to go back, but I was like, I was so turned off by that. I was like, oh, cool, bowling anime. And I was like, wait, what?
The old bait and switch.
Yeah,
instead of bowling, like, it's Sengoku anime.
Yeah, like maybe I'm wrong and it was you know, just a trick, but like, I don't know. I'll have to check out between now and the next time we record and report back if that's
so
really
what
it was.
Now and then here and there would have been an archery anime, I guess, or whatever it was, if not for the twist in the first episode.
Oh wow, was that a twist in the first episode?
Yeah, it was like the happy, super like slice of life looking show or like a rom-com or something. And then LaLaRue shows up and things get bad real fast.
Yeah, talk about ruining the vibe. LaLaRue might be all-time biggest like mood killer characters of all anime ever.
Yep.
I think at least in that one earlier on in the episode.
Yeah. Was I think about this halfway through or something, but
yeah, this one is literally like
the last moment of the episode or something.
Yeah, it's like credits roll or like post credits or something like that. It's wild.
Hmm.
And I wanted to mention one other show that we probably shouldn't talk too much about because I think maybe we'll do an episode that. Taco Peas.
Yes, I've been holding off on Taco Pea because I've been hoping for us to just dedicate enough to it. I have so many things to talk about with Taco Pea.
Yeah, me too.
so many things.
I will say briefly, it's what, 6 episodes?
Yes.
So just go watch it. It is kind of depressing, though.
Let me clarify. Trigger warning. Let's see. Child abuse and suicide. It's got every trigger warning you can think of, pretty much.
The show actually has the trigger warning literally at the beginning of the episodes. Yeah, because
I think the only thing it doesn't really do is SA, but it does just about everything else. Yeah. And it's with kids, so it's like a lot worse because of it. But that being said, I'm so glad it was animated, because the manga has been out for a bit, but it's kind of like Oyasumi Pun Pun. Like, it is, really dark, very dark subject matter, but also I think that's what makes it really. It's like the train wreck analogy. Like, you have to watch it to the end because you're like, I how could it possibly get worse from here? And it just keeps snowballing, and you're just like, oh, I can't look, but I have to now. I'm too committed. But yeah, animated quite well. I like the art style a lot. Also, the simple fact that Taco Peak exists and I don't instantly like loathe them as a character is already a minor miracle, because famously, things like Taco Bee usually grate me the wrong way pretty much constantly. I mean, this dates all the way back to like Mokuna and Magic Knight Rayearth.
Well, I'm biting my tongue. I'm trying not to.
Yeah, I know.
I wanted to mention one other show that I watched more than I probably should have. I'll probably keep watching more. I watched a lot of See You Tomorrow at the Food Court, it's kind of a stupid, pointless show. It's two girls who meet at the food court and talk. It seems like it's a Yonkoma show. It's a show like I couldn't pick anything to watch, and so I put that on. And so I watched a bunch that way. I don't know if I recommend it unless you like. It's like Manzai, really. Like, it's just, you've got the boke and the tsukomu, gomi, whatever, the that kind of combination. Anyways, let's see who has something else. Dylan, do you have another interesting thing worth mentioning?
Well, I have millions of things to mention.
I was going to talk about my O, but
oh yeah, go for it.
Oh, I mean, because we've done the A and the M, but game wise, I guess that relates. I mean, I guess it's both surprising and not surprising, but probably as of like 3 months ago, I started getting into Tekken 8.
Oh, no.
And, I've always like dabbled in Tekken starting at like 5, and 5 is large. Well, 5 Dark Resurrection is largely viewed as the great. It's like Tekken's third strike, but 5 is where I got my Tekken start, and I was like, it was, I put time into it and it just was not clicking. It's 3D fighters generally just don't click for me, but I always go back and try it again. I've purchased 5, 6, 7, and now 8, at some points when they release, usually on sale. Thing about 8 is it is the Tekken that Tekken players hate right now, because it's done a lot of balancing-wise, Bandai Namco have done a lot of things to kind of really upset core Tekken players. That being said, I don't have a problem with it, because now it feels fun to me, so maybe it appeals to more mainline traditional fighting game people that aren't hardcore Tekken traditionalists. Like, I get why they're upset, I totally do, but...
Nick, I'm going to interrupt there and appreciate that you called yourself a mainline fighting game person rather than a mainstream.
Yeah, mainlining the fighting games. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a hardcore 2D fighting game player. Like, I'm not a casual by any means, but 3D, I'm definitely more casual. Like, I know some of the core fundamental things like hurry and backdash and wave dash and all that stuff. But anyway, not to get too deep into the technical muck of Tekken, but Yeah, it's a thing. It's a beautiful game, man. Like, one thing Bandai Namco does real well is understand how to use Unreal, now 5, I guess. It's a yeah, oof. It's a good looking game. I
do like how different it is from, I mean, even in the latest iteration, it's just still its own thing, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it very much is. And the thing I think I like about it most is it's basically the Tekken 8 is kind of the Kusoge of Tekken. Like, everybody does such absurdly powerful things that, like, everybody complains about just about every character. I think there are, like, two characters that are viewed as air quotes weak. Everybody else basically couldn't win at any given moment just because of the mechanics they put in. And, you know, at the highest level, it feels really rock, paper, scissory all the time. But, you know, at the middling level where I'm at, it leads to some pretty hysterical things that can happen. It is not the game for the faint of heart. I mean, it takes thousands of hours to get, like, competent at the game, and that's not an investment that normal people should be doing for any game, frankly. But yeah, I'm nowhere close to that. I'm like barely touching maybe like dozens of hours, but I have a bit of legacy skill, so it's not a miserable experience for me. I definitely am ranking up fast because most people just throw out unsafe moves and don't even understand frame data, so at least I can just sit back, block, and punish. I'm sure at some point that'll stop working, and then I actually have to start really playing the game. But yeah, you know, it makes me feel good about myself to be able to beat up on people that don't know what they're doing. So let me have my victories.
What you can get.
Yeah. Otherwise, gaming-wise, yeah. Nothing too noteworthy, I'd say. I've kind of become a mainstream pleb everywhere else. Like, I'm one of the, I don't know, like, millions of people that got Arc Raiders, and I'm playing that right now. Never thought I would, but here I am. I'm playing with my group of friends, so. But yeah, that's it for my recent gaming escapades, I suppose.
Yeah, I haven't been gaming as much. I was playing the Elden Ring DLC for a long time, and then
when you say DLC, are you talking about Nightreign?
No, the actual Elden Ring DLC.
The actual DLC. I forgot there was DLC for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost as big as the original game. It's crazy. I mean, I still haven't revealed the whole map yet.
Dang.
But then I took a break because Expedition 33 got so, super big, and I wanted to play it, and I didn't want it to get spoiled because it seems like the story is supposed to be really good. So
I mean,
I started playing that.
It was the game of the year by all metrics, right? Yeah, I still haven't gotten to it, but I've had even coworkers who are more casual gamers. I mean, say I should definitely play it. So yeah, we'll see when I can actually get to it.
Meanwhile,
it's fun and very French.
Meanwhile, my wife and I, and we just last week finally played through Breath of the Wild because we got Switch 2. So I had not played like at all, and I didn't really know anything about the game other than like weapons break, and some people didn't like that. But we finally played through, and after like 200 hours in it, we finally committed ourselves to beating Ganon. Switch 2 version's really nice. Aside from all the graphical and loading stuff, which I never played Switch 1, so I don't know, but like there's no loading for anything anywhere, and like view distances are forever. But the other thing that's really cool is the for iOS, they made a Zelda, there's a Switch 2 app, and inside of that there's like Zelda mode, basically. And you can go in there, and it looks really nice on an iPad, and you can load it up, and it has, like, your map, and it literally puts, like, real time, like, where your character is on the map, and you can configure whether you want it to show you, like, things on the map that, like, you haven't found yet, which is really cool when you're going Korok hunting, because I hate those little bastards. Yeah. But you literally was like, oh, hey, wait a minute, there's a Korok there. So we'd like load it up, and then we go on the map and put like five different spots for like, hey, here's next like five Koroks. All right, go get those. Like, so that was a really nice, that Zelda notes thing is pretty sweet. It's really cool. So that game is, it's pretty good. You know, I usually put in like 200 hours on a game. So
yeah.
It's pretty cool game.
It is like one of the best games.
I mean, it is in the debate for, like, best Zelda by lots of people now. So,
yeah,
I don't have strong opinions because Zelda's... I like them, but they're not, like, you know, it's not, like, my favorite franchise ever. It's more my wife's thing. She definitely enjoyed both Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom because she put, like, 180 hours into both. So... nice. And I do agree, the Switch 2 upgrades are definitely worth it. Even if you've kind of done everything in the games, just to like finally see, in my opinion, how Nintendo probably wanted them to be experienced. But just having 60 frames per second is a huge deal. Like, it just makes it feel so much better to play. So, yeah, I agreed. If you can afford a Switch 2, and you already have Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, the extra $10 to upgrade them is totally worth it, in my opinion.
Nice. Well, we are now basically at the end of our time here, but I'll go around once more and see if anybody has anything to they really want to squeeze in here in these final minutes. Starting with Mike.
Well, I final did thoughts? Think of one last if Korean movies squeak into the O category for us, because the Palm had a preview for Palmy members of No Other Choice, which is the latest movie by my Korean pronunciation is terrible, but Park Chan-wook, the director of Old Boy.
Oh.
So it was a black comedy about a veteran paper maker who gets laid off after Americans buy out his company. And then after being stuck looking for work for 13 months and worrying about losing his family and such, he decides to create an opening as well as eliminate the most likely other candidates.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. I'd recommend seeing it if you have a chance.
Okay. I'll see if I can find it. Dylan, what about you?
I'm going to go and get an anti-recommendation for The Daily Life of a Part-Time Torturer. It's a new show from the season. Literally,
it sounds terrible.
Yeah, this premise is that torture is legal in this world, and the main character who you're supposed to like, you know, he was like so good at like all these literally like 60 other part-time jobs he has. The people literally wanted him to take over, but he got bored. But now he's doing torturing people, literally torturing them. And he's supposed to be likable, but it's like they turn away slightly, but you literally see him there with like pliers and all these other things. Ugh. Like, yikes. It's quite literally like peak 2026 show, like quite literally glorifying torture.
Watch Brazil again instead, please?
Yeah, I give my recommendations for things from the standard recommendations are stuff like streaming garbage, meh, please no more like this ever. And my recommendation for this show was like, maybe we shouldn't make shows literally glorifying torture.
Yeah.
You know, maybe don't do that. So
do better, Japan.
Yeah. peak 2026. So let's do better. Okay.
Nick, last thoughts?
Random bit of, I guess, a controversy, for lack of a better term. I don't know if anybody's watched Free Run Season 2 yet, or, you know, what episodes are out. I think only like 3 or 4 episodes are out right now. It's airing right now. Really good still. If you enjoyed S1, highly, highly recommend S2. And to nobody's surprise, the openings and endings are both really good. The ending is this really cool, like, hand-sketched kind of, like, lack of a better term, like, almost like flipbook-style animated, like, you know, it looks like just, like, really cool hand-drawn, like, colored pencil animation. And you chuckled, so maybe you know about this.
Yeah, I think I heard about this.
So, apparently, because the internet does what it does, there were wild, baseless accusations that the ending was made using AI. And so... very quickly, the main animator for the ending sequence asked, I believe, got permission from Madhouse to, like, have their mic drop moment and literally posted photos of all of the keyframes that they drew on their, you know, on the floor of their apartment or house and just showing like, no. And then they literally released a video of them doing like flipping through the pages in sequence to show and like to like side by side with the actual ending. And it's like, yeah, people still have art talent. They can, people can still make good looking art. Not everything is AI slop. And it's sad that people can't even recognize when something is AI versus not still, because it definitely, in my opinion anyways, AI animation still has all these trademark call signs, right? Like of it. So,
not but also it's like this team, this studio, like it's extremely high quality anime. These guys are not going to let somebody just, you know, crap out some AI stuff to stick on their ending.
They are, first and foremost, they are artists. They have integrity, right? Like these are the people who, you know, probably vehemently are against implementation of AI in anything in the creative space because it shouldn't be there ever, in my opinion. I agree. I don't think AI has any place in the creative space. But yeah, I thought that was pretty great that within 2 days of accusations beginning, they literally just like, with finger waggle and showed all the awesome keyframes that they drew. I'm like, man, they got to hold on to it, which is pretty great. So yeah, that was my little mini tirade on AI, I guess.
Yeah. Very 2026 controversy. All right. Well, that'll do it for us today. And hopefully we will see you again soon. Next time it will be, we're shooting to do our annual awards episode of the Kenzokis. So look forward to that. So until next time, this is AMO Kenzoku signing off. Saraba.